Hey everybody, this is Dominique. Are you ready to do more with your life and money? Today we wind up our three-part series on frequently asked financial questions from a website that has over 30 million unique views per month. And we're going to get into situations today. And I'm really excited about this podcast episode. So stay tuned.
Are you tired of feeling like there's more to life that you're just not experiencing? Are you unmotivated by keeping up with the status quo? Are you ready to start living intentionally with your finances and creating the life you want? Get ready for Experiencing Financial Contentment with Dominique Henderson, a podcast focused on helping you create margin for the life you want to live by putting your money where your heart is. Each week, Dominique will help you explore the decisions you make around money so that you can achieve better results. Now here's your host, Dominique Henderson.
Hey there, everybody. This is Dominique, owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, where we're helping our clients to achieve their ideal financial outcome, and host of Experiencing Financial Contentment, the podcast, where we are aiming to help you to do more with your life and money around the themes of financial literacy, economic empowerment, and personal development. So today, for all my new listeners and repeat listeners, we are winding up this three-part series on frequently asked, it's kind of like the best of, I would say, but the frequently asked financial questions from a website that gets over 30 million views, unique views per month. So I'm really excited about this episode. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. I'm always really, really, I'll just say surprised, really, by people that, you know, chat with me or let me know that the podcast has been helpful, because that's what it's here for. It's here to help you take that red pill to leave the matrix of the average so that you can hit your microphone and mess up the sound, which is what I just did. But anyways, leave the matrix of the average so you can live a life of contentment. It's all about living the best life, right? So today we're going to get into some situations, and hopefully these will resonate with you. These are like I said, a lot of eyes have been on this because this thing gets 30 million views a month. And I won't go back into this. Listen to the part one and part two, and you'll know how I get access to this information, and yada, yada, yada. So what we're going to do today is we're going to cover some of these questions. I had a different format for the first two shows. We're going to do a little something different today. I'll just read the questions out because I want to save time and I want to get to all this. So that's what we're going to do today. All right. I'm just going to read this out. So this is somebody that has written into Investopedia, and not just myself, but other advisors get to see this because I obviously don't answer all the questions that come in. I tend to answer less than I used to, but that's a whole nother thing. But anyways, this question came in from somebody. It says, we have a guaranteed income of 80% of our current working income and will probably never take Social Security as a result. Should we still have $1 million saved for retirement? Right. So $1 million for retirement is this big number sometimes. And it's this number that is like, so what's my number? What's my number? And I did go through a what's my number, know your numbers episode back when we were doing the podcast as the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, episode 44, know your numbers, the most important financial ratios and formulas to know, or something like that. So go back and look at that, because I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail. I'm just going to kind of set this up as a problem and kind of work through back of the envelope math of how you would do it. So they said that they're guaranteed 80% of some number, X. We don't know what that is. They didn't give it to us. It's like an algebra problem, right? So do they need it, the $1 million for retirement if they're already guaranteed 80% of their current income? Well, it just depends on what you want to live on. I would answer that question. I really, to be honest, I don't have enough of, variables right here to answer that. But the point is, when you're thinking about what you should live on, there's a formula they teach us when you're going through the Certified Financial Planner curriculum. It's called, or there's a term they teach us, and there's a formula that goes with it. So the term is the wage replacement ratio, right? So WRP for short. And wage replacement ratio is basically the amount in a percentage that you would multiply your current income by to get what you're going to need in retirement, right? So retirement typically has a few different sources, right? You may have like a 401k or an IRA. You may have SSI, and you may have other income, right? So all those are going to, you know, make up what your retirement income is going to be, all right? Now, ideally, it would be as close to what you're living on as what you're living off of right now, but likely it will not be, which is the reason why we save for retirement so that we can have that. But that's neither here nor there. Either. So let's just say it's 80% because that is a normal average wage replacement ratio. And they come up with this because, you know, if you start to take out the fact that you're going to be in a lower income tax bracket. Now, I know that income tax rates, marginal tax rates may go up. But the point is relatively speaking, your working year's income tax is going to be higher than your retirement years. Okay. And then you'll also have things like, you know, hopefully a paid off house, expenses drop. You're not supporting kids anymore, expenses drop. So that's why you get down to a number called, you know, 75 to 80%. So we'll use 80%. And so let's just say you were making 100K times that 80%. That gives you 80 grand a year. All right. So real quick, back of the envelope, and we're going to move to the next one. So for all intents and purposes, the amount that people distribute off their nest egg for several decades has been about 3%, right? And that means that that's usually what your nest egg can make in terms of interest or real return. Real return would be your nominal return adjusted by inflation, right? So your real return of 3%, if you take that, typically speaking, that's a pretty conservative measure. So that 3%, if you divided it, your 80 by that, and I think I did the math before, it's something like 2.666667, right? So that's what your nest egg would be. Let me double check that right quick just so nobody's like, he's a financial advisor and he doesn't know how to do math. Okay, so 2.6667, right? So that's your nest egg. So this is to say, if you had this, let's just say you began your distributions at 65, right? You retire at 65 and you had 2.6. This means that you could take 3% of that nest egg every year, probably for as long as we don't have a financial crisis. That Monte Carlo simulations and stuff, that'll probably last you until you die. So let's call it 85. Most plans are built to 85 or 90, right? Age 90. So you could take 3% off of that number and live pretty good. And that would be your 80 grand. So you just kind of back into that. So take your whatever your current income is, multiply it by whatever wage replacement ratio that you want. Let's just say you use 80%. That will give you 80 grand. Then you divide that 80 grand by a very conservative estimate like 0.03. Now, you could do something like 0.04 or 0.05. It just kind of depends on what you want to do. In your situation, 0.03 and 80% are numbers that I, as a financial advisor, use all the time, and so do my peers. So you're safe there. So that would give you the amount of money that you would need, obviously, to have in a nest egg so that you can live off of 80 grand a year. Now, obviously, there are different time horizons and, you know, different factors, but I'm just kind of giving you back of the envelope now so you have somewhere to start. All right, so let's go to our next question. Our next question is, what are the tax implications of moving my 401k into an IRA? I want to move my 401k into an IRA, then I want to cash out a portion of those funds. What kind of IRA would allow me to do this? What are the tax implications? Okay, so in episode 42 of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, I did the infamous 401k rollover, which is basically at the end of that episode, I go through 6 or 7 steps that you can just learn to do your own 401k rollover. Not a big deal, okay? Let's break this back or break this down and move back just a couple of steps, though, because I always like to look at the question beneath the question. There's a couple of different questions here. What are the tax implications of moving my 401k into an IRA? Typically, there's zero, right? Especially if you do a non-taxable, if you qualify for a non-taxable distribution, which you should, that's the only reason you should roll your 401k into an IRA. And the only way that you really can, you don't want to do it any other way because the tax implications are just ridiculous. So if you qualify for a non-taxable distribution, which means that you've either died, or you have a divorce, or you have a separation of service, like you are retired from that company, or you get fired, or something like that, something that causes you to separate from that employer, sometimes disability. Now you have a pool of money in your 401k, and you're no longer attached to that employer. That allows you to do what is called a non-taxable distribution. And you can roll that over, which is where that episode 42 of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp comes in handy. Roll that over into an IRA. That is a non-taxable event, right? And then you have the money in the IRA. Now, if you choose to cash out, like this person is talking about, cash out a portion of those funds once it gets into the IRA, that can be a taxable event. It just depends. Now, if you're over 59 and a half, you can avoid the 10% penalty. For early withdrawal. There's some other ways to mitigate that too, but that's the most common. And then you, any distributions made after that, let's say you did mitigate that and you don't have the 10% penalty. Well, most 401k funds are on a pre-tax basis, meaning that you haven't paid taxes on that money yet. You've been getting a current tax, current income deduction, a current tax deduction in the when you earn that income. And so when you take it out of an IRA or anything, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. So you will be taxed at ordinary income rates. And so let me give you a scenario here. Let's just say you had a 100. I love 100 because it's a nice round number. Let's say you had a $100,000 401k that you then rolled into an IRA. And then you want to take some money out to, I don't know, make home improvements or whatever you wanted to do. My pen's dying now. Let's see if it's going to work again. There we go. Okay. Say you want to make some home improvements. So let's say you want to take out 10. Let's erase that. Okay. All right. Say you want to take out 10,000. Well, you're going to have to pay taxes on that. So let's say that your income for the year was $60,000, and now it's going to be $70,000 because the way that the IRS looks at this is ordinary income. So that will be included in a different line on your 1040, and that would be included as gross income that you would have to pay taxes on. Right. So it just filters down to whatever your tax rate is after all your other deductions and whatnot. So that's how that works. And so typically speaking, you can budget for, you know, a lot of people, I've seen people do a lot of distributions out of these type of accounts, and people budget for anywhere from 10 to 25% withholding. So what they do is when you take that money out, they just go ahead and say, don't give me the whole $10,000. Give me 90% of that or 75% of that, and the rest send to the U.S. Treasury Department for withholding so that I can true up my taxes at the end of the year. That's typically how people do that. And so that's the tax implications of moving your 401k into an IRA. And if you wanted to cash out some more. Now, what kind of IRA would allow me to do that? You have to keep the pre-tax and after-tax buckets separate, right? So if your 401k has been pre-tax, then you have to roll it over into a traditional IRA, which is also pre-tax. If your 401k has been after-tax, like a Roth 401k, then you can roll it into a Roth IRA. So you just have to keep those separate because you can't, unless you decide to pay taxes on the pre-tax amount, then you can roll it into a Roth IRA. All right. Are annuities a good retirement investment? My spouse and I are 70 and 67 year old and retired. We have a fixed and variable annuity. Is this a good investment for monthly income? We sometimes need extra income for home maintenance. I believe, at least personally that and professionally, that annuities can be an excellent vehicle to basically not outlive your money if that's a concern. What you're essentially getting with an annuity is you are getting a guarantee from an insurance provider, a company, and for that guarantee, you're taking on, you're transferring risk. You're transferring the risk that you are going to live longer than the money that you have set aside, right? So in exchange for transferring that risk, which is going to lower your risk, it's called mitigating your risk, and giving that to somebody else, well, what do they want in return? Well, they want a big lump sum of money from you, usually, and then they're going to give you payments over time that are typically going to be below market returns. And when I say market returns, I mean like stock market returns or equity market returns. They're going to be typically below that because on the other side of that, the insurance company has to make money. They have to be able to cover everybody that's doing that, yada, yada, yada. They got profit, yada, yada, yada. All the point is that you're going to basically be sacrificing some of the upside potential for other alternatives where that money could go. But if your primary purpose is, I don't want to run out of money because I may, you know, I don't have a lot of money and I want to make sure that what I have does last, then this is a really great fit for you. This essentially is what some lottery winners do, right? So you get a big windfall lottery and then you accept payments over time. It's an annuity. That's basically what an annuity is. I'm not going to go into fixed and variable. It's way beyond the scope of this particular podcast, but suffice to say, yes, an annuity can be a good solution for you if you are concerned with outliving your money, either because you're very young. Like I said, you know, another scenario is athletes. Athletes get a big windfall of money. I believe Tony Dorsett did this when he first came in the league, and he had his money put into annuities. He can't touch it right now. There are tax implications for trying to touch it. But when he got ready to turn on the spigot, if you will, and start taking income, that money was there for him. So there you go. Last but not least, should I sell my rental property? And this is a good one. So let's pull over the screen for this one. So this person says, should I sell my rental property? I have a 30-year mortgage on a rental home. I still owe $115 and the property is valued at $145. The monthly mortgage payment is $850, insurance and all. I pay $100 a month for property management fee and $60 a month for lawn care. I have it rented out for $1,300 a month. Would I make more money if I just sell this house? Oh, great question, right? So full disclosure, I do not have any real estate that I own right now. I have in the past, but I don't currently own any except for my primary mortgage. So let's talk about this from a numbers standpoint, because that's really the best way. Like part of what I do as an advisor is help separate the emotion of a decision into a logical, systematic way that you need to be thinking about things. And so if you're a real estate owner, what you are primarily concerned with, hopefully, is what is called net operating income, or NOI for short, right? So this is what, after all your expenses are done, what you earn off the property, right? So this person has given us some good numbers here. So $850 is a cost, and $100 is a cost, and $60 a month is a cost, right? So that's their cost, which is $950 and $10, really? Okay, so that's their total cost based on what the numbers they gave. And then they said they got $1,300 that they get per month in rent. All right, so let's just assume that they're renting this place 12 months a year, which I've owned real estate, and I know that that doesn't happen all the time. But let's just say, and so that's gross rents. And so NOI in this case is $290. Okay. So is $290 a good investment? $290 a month times 12, and I'll need my calculator for that. I think that's $1,500 or so. $3,480. Let's round that up to $3,500. All right. So is the $3,500 a good investment? That's a good question. So how do you calculate that? $115 is what you still owe. The property is valued at $145. So there's a couple calculations you can do, and I'm going to show you both of these. Let's remember all this and just call it $3,500 as NOI. Okay, so we got to wait for my screen because my technology is so old that it takes a little while to calibrate. So 3,500 is the number we need to remember, NOI. And we really have about $30,000 of trapped equity here. And to me, this is the only I can show you different ones, but this is the only calculation to me that really matters, is this trapped equity. All right? Because that's the question is should I just sell this house and release the trapped equity, right? It's worth 145. You subtract 115, and I know there's brokerage and commission fees and stuff, all that in there, but just to say the 30,000 there. So you could take that 30,000 and you go invest it in an alternate asset class. So 3,500 divided by 30,000 is really what you need to be trying to figure out if that's worth it. And so that equates to about 11%, 11.6%, 6.7% to be exact, return, which is not bad. You look at the historical return of the stock market, right? But there's some factors here, right? So the first factor is taxes, right? Because what they did not mention in here is how much they're paying for taxes, because you are taxed on rental income. It's on a different schedule E. Anyways, you are taxed on that. So there is some level of that you can't write off and that this gross rents get taxed. I don't know what that is, but I'm just going to say conservatively that about $300, let's say $200 comes out of that to pay Uncle Sam. Okay. So now we're down to $3,300 in NOI. And I gave them the benefit of doubt and said they had full occupancy all the year, but they probably don't, but we'll just leave that as it is. The other thing though is this, time factor. Now they said they pay $100 a month for property management fee, and I'm going to assume that means most things. But just the way that this looks, let's just do some numbers. This is all impromptu, by the way, guys. So 8%, that might be right. They may pay very well, $100 a month. It seems a little low, but that's okay. So 3,300 is the number that you really need to be dividing your trapped equity by. And so that's 11% return, which is not bad. So in this case, could I make more money if I just sell this house? Well, then you start to look at that 30,000 could be going towards a bond or a well-diversified portfolio earning, you know, probably something less, to be quite honest, than 11%. Let's call it 8%, right? And so which one should I do, 8% or 11%? Well, let's look at the merits of the 8%. The 8%, the best thing about it is it's diversified, right? So if this person loses a renter or can't find a renter, then this whole thing is out the picture. There is no more 11%. So this is what I would say. I would say that real estate comes into my investment empire and portfolio later in the game, once I already have a diversified portfolio and asset classes, right? And the real estate is just something that I add on, because 11% is pretty good. And I'm diversifying my asset class further. So here's my point. This would come first in priority, whereas the real estate would come second. So if they don't have other investments, other portfolios, I probably would sell this property, because there's no other thing that I'm getting from this except for the income, which is not that diversified. It's just one revenue stream. I would like to have a diversified basket of assets giving me a revenue stream versus just one. And I'll add something like real estate afterwards, right? So that would be my particular answer in this scenario. And maybe you're having some real estate issues and you want to talk about that further. Hop into the Facebook group, Creating Your Roadmap to Financial Contentment. We can take this offline and really kind of break down, because some people don't even use property managers. They do it themselves. And that's a whole nother calculation on your time, right? That you'll have to deduct further from that NOI. But like I said, hop into the Facebook group. If you want to give me a call, 214-699-7599, extension 1 is where you can reach me. And this has been great. This has been fun. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll see you back later. Take care. Bye-bye.